Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note, today's call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. And it is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Public Advocacy Director for Muslim Advocates, Mr. Scott Simpson.
Thank you, Savannah, and good morning all, and thank you for joining today's call. My name is Scott Simpson, and I serve as the Public Advocacy Director for Muslim Advocates, a national legal advocacy and educational organization that works on the front lines of civil rights to guarantee freedom and justice for Americans of all faiths. We're here today to discuss an important class action lawsuit filed last night by Muslim Advocates, Lutfi Legal LLC, the Immigrant Advocacy and Litigation Center, PLLC, and Public Counsel. The suit is on behalf of 36 individuals who have had waivers from the Muslim ban wrongfully denied or stalled despite chronic medical conditions, prolonged family separations, significant business interests, or extraordinary talents that would contribute greatly to the United States in fields like medicine, science, and music. This is the first legal challenge to the implementation of the Muslim ban since June's Supreme Court ruling on the ban in Trump v. Hawaii. I'm joined on today's call by attorneys and clients in this suit. After each of our speakers has had a chance to share their story, I'll open up the call for question and answer. If you do not have a copy of the press release or the filing of last night's lawsuit, you should send me an email to Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at MuslimAdvocates.org. That's Scott at MuslimAdvocates.org, and we'll make sure you get the spelling of our speakers, the complaint, the press release, and any other details you might need. I'm joined on today's call by Serene Shabaya, a senior staff attorney for Muslim Advocates, Sudi Warder, one of 36 clients in the case, and Shabnam Lutfi of Lutfi Legal LLC. Without any further ado, I'll turn the call over to my colleague, Serene Shabaya, Senior Staff Attorney for Muslim Advocates. Serene?
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being on this call. On June 26, 2018, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Trump versus Hawaii, allowing the Muslim ban to stay in effect indefinitely after having allowed it to move forward temporarily the previous December. That decision was devastating to our communities. Many had been holding out hope that they would somehow be able to get relief through the court, and many thought that the legal fight was over. But we are here today to say that the fight is not over, and we are taking on the next legal battle through the lawsuit that we filed yesterday with Lutfi Legal and our other partners. The ban is a terrible policy, but as of right now and for the foreseeable future, it is the law of the land. And it includes specific provisions that allow for case-by-case waivers from the ban for people who can show that they would suffer undue hardship if they're not allowed to enter, that their entry would be in the national interest, and that their entry would not pose a threat to the United States. The text of the ban promises that every visa applicant will be considered for a waiver, and it orders the agencies to provide guidance and a clear process for adjudicating waivers. But the reality on the ground has been much different. Although the government has been incredibly zealous in enforcing other aspects of the ban by not allowing people to come to this country, it has failed to enforce the part that explains the waiver process. It has failed to create any process by which people can submit documents in support of a waiver application, documents that are not usually included in the original visa application and that would speak to any undue hardships that people might be facing. It has not provided definitions of key terms that explain someone's eligibility for a waiver, and it has left consular officials, by their own admission, with the impression that they are to deny waivers by any means possible. Our lawsuit seeks to hold the government to its word. Since waivers are now the only way by which people can come to the United States from the covered countries, the government should follow its own laws and its own stated policies and should put in place a robust process and provide fair and full consideration of each applicant for a case-by-case waiver. That's what our lawsuit asks for, and it opens up the next chapter in the fight against the Muslim ban. I'll now turn it over to Sudhi Wardere, one of our wonderful and courageous plaintiffs, who will talk to you a little bit about her story and how the ban has put her life on hold.
Hello.
Hey, Sudhi, are you on the line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, great. The call's all yours.
Okay. So my name is Sudhi. I'm originally from Somalia, and my husband's from Somalia. We got married on 2016, and I went to South Africa to meet him. The wedding took place in South Africa. I got pregnant right away, and I came back on September of 2016. Right when I came back, I found out that I'm pregnant with our baby. I gave birth around May 26th, but I filed for him on October of 2016. The petition got approved around March before I gave birth, and I was really excited that at least he would be here maybe by the time I give birth. That didn't happen. I gave birth all by myself in the hospital with my mom, by my son instead of my husband. I waited for a while, and I was hoping when the baby turns a couple of months, maybe he'll be here. And then my son turned one on his first birthday. His father's still not here. Then my last hope was the Supreme Court, which happened on June 26th. That was my last hope. I was hoping that at least since he missed my son's birth, our son's birth, and his birthday, that he'll be here at least before he learns how to talk and walk. But on June 26th, when the Supreme Court took place, I felt like I wasn't welcome here. And my husband was denied because of his nationality or the religion he practices. Now I'm so devastated, I don't know what to do. And this ban is affecting my family financially and emotionally. As I take my son to the park and I see all the fathers there with their kids, I wonder, why is my husband not here? Is it because of the religion he practices or where he's from, his nationality? Because I am a U.S. citizen, and it said families can be united if they go through the legal process and all the paperwork, which I did. And still he's not here. It's been 2 years that we haven't seen each other. I don't know how I'm going to explain it to my son when he already learned how to say mom when he starts seeing dad and he sees all the other kids whose dads are all here, but his dad can't be here, even though we're U.S. citizens because of where we're from. What even shocked me the most is how the Supreme Court allowed this to take effect. That was my last hope, and now I feel like I have no hope. I'm just stuck here by myself wondering when or how my husband will be here. As my son was a couple of months, I remember taking him to the hospital a lot of times because I couldn't stay home with him, and I have to work and provide for him and myself. Since my husband's not here, my son got sick so many times, and I was at the hospital wondering when this misery will end. I'm getting very emotional. I don't know what else to say.
Sudhi, thank you for sharing this, and thank you for willing to show yourself on this call. And the fact that you're our client just is very meaningful, and that you're willing to share your story. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll turn the call over to Shabnam Lotfi of Lotfi Legal LLC.
Thank you. Yes, good morning, everyone. So as Sudhi points out, this travel ban is really impacting a significant number of people around the country. And Sudhi's story is not uncommon. Our office receives calls every single day from a family that is heartbroken and in distress American citizens have been separated from their spouses, from their fiancés, from their immediate family members. One woman said to me, the travel ban is breaking up my marriage, that we can't continue to live years of our lives separated, and that the best years of our lives have unfortunately just been ruined. Parents have missed their students' graduation ceremonies. They've missed the birth of a grandchild. They've missed weddings, engagement parties. They've missed the most important moments of their family's lives. We do have other plaintiffs in this case, and they've waited in line. They've waited for as long as 15 years. Others have invested $500,000 in the American economy years before the travel ban came into play. They've relied on American laws. They've paid all the filing fees. They've complied with every regulation. And these are people that have zero criminal record and do not pose any threat to U.S. national security. But when it comes time for the U.S. to honor its half of the agreement, we fail. And this is a big deal because, you know, we got to think about what kind of a message is the American government sending to the world when it doesn't uphold its part of the deal. So, you know, the worst part about some of these cases also is that for many visa applicants, when it comes to the waiver process, they feel as though it goes towards their dignity. They don't actually get to present their case and know that it will be adjudicated in good faith. And that scares me, and it makes me uncomfortable because a principal tenet of the American legal system is that everyone can have their day in court, that everyone can present their case. And right now, that doesn't appear to be happening. We will continue to fight. We will continue to litigate this case and work towards fighting for justice on this case as well as others should they need to come up. And I'll send this back to Scott. I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Shabna. Savannah, I think we're ready to open up the call for Q&A.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and one to ask a question, and we can pause a few moments to allow questions to enter the queue.
And while we're waiting for questions to queue, does anyone have any additional remarks they'd like to make?
Yeah, I did. This is Shabnam. I think it's really important that we highlight some statistics because they speak volumes to this case. My understanding is that there were at least 28,276 visa applicants who otherwise were eligible for a visa but for the presidential proclamation, the travel ban. And it appears as though around 1,147 visa applicants received their visa, another 1,000 have been cleared, but that doesn't mean that they actually received their visa. The statistics are just shocking. This is a ban where 98% of visa applicants are being denied. The majority of these people are people who otherwise would qualify for an exception. These are people that are coming to see American family members. They've got strong business ties to the U.S. They've got investments here. These are the people that should be able to come to the U.S. or at least be considered for a waiver, and they're not. And I think the numbers mean a lot.
Thank you, Shabnam. I understand we have a question in the queue.
Yes, we can go next to Ted Hessen. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, all. Thank you for having the call. And sorry if I'm just getting up to speed on the lawsuit, but what is the core difference in the amended complaint versus what you had filed previously?
This is Serene. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Serene.
This is Serene. So the amended complaint is kind of takes into account the recent developments that have happened, and in the aftermath of Trump versus Hawaii, we are not trying to take on the ban itself kind of writ large. We're not trying to rehash the arguments that were put forward in those cases. What we're seeing in this case is the ban is now the law of the land. That law includes very specific provisions about how people should be treated and what consideration they should be given on a case-by-case basis when they apply for visas. And the government has failed to follow its own laws, its own policies, essentially, by not putting in place a process for people to be able to apply for those waivers, by essentially denying or stalling almost every waiver request, and by not providing guidance or meaningful information for people about how they are supposed to navigate this process. And so the lawsuit at this point is much narrower, and it's addressed to the question of whether the government is implementing its own policy in the way that it said it would. And what it seeks to do is to provide a more robust process where people can be sure that their applications are being considered. You know, when people apply for family-based visas, for example, in the ordinary course, they would not submit a lot of documentation about hardship because that's not one of the criteria. If you have a family member in the United States, if you meet all the criteria, if your visa number comes up, you should be good to go. And yet consular officials are frequently not accepting any additional documentation about hardship, which raises the question, how are you going to make a determination about whether someone has undue hardship if you don't allow them a process by which to submit documents? We've spoken to hundreds of immigration attorneys around the country and ourselves also at Muslim Advocates, and I know at Lutfi Legal, have been helping people through this process, and what we've come to realize is there is no process. Lawyers and applicants have had to invent ways by which to kind of try to make sure that certain key documents get put in the file so that consular officials who are looking at them can actually understand enough about the applicant to make a determination. And what we've also come to realize is the way that they're thinking about some of the criteria for individuals to meet waivers are aligned with the way that they looked at countries in order to include them in the ban in the first place, which essentially makes the waiver process a fraud, as one former consular official described it. So what I would say, and Shabnam can speak to the original lawsuit obviously more, I think that was a much broader lawsuit. What we're doing right now is saying, okay, in the aftermath of the proclamation going into effect, how is the government implementing the proclamation's provisions in a way that is actually true to what they require and in a way that provides full and fair consideration for people who are now left with the only option or who are now left with only one way of being able to get into the United States, which is to be granted a case-by-case waiver.
Great. Thank you for explaining that.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. We can pause another moment to allow any additional questions to enter the queue. And we can go next to Umar Farouk. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for holding this press call. I just wanted to get a clarification. Shabnam, you mentioned a statistic, 20,000-something cases that were eligible for visa. I just wanted to get a clarification on what that exact number was.
Sure. So my understanding is, and I'm looking at a letter from the U.S. Department of State to Senator Chris Van Hollen, dated June 22nd, 2018. So 33,176 visa applications were received from nationals of the banned countries, and 4,900 of those were found ineligible for reasons other than the travel ban. So what we did is we deduct the 4,900 from the first number to come to 28,276 visa applications. Those are the people that otherwise would have been able to get a visa had it not been for the travel ban. And as far as the people who have actually received the visa in their passport stamped, that number is 1,147. There's another number that recently came out that there's been 996 people that are cleared for waivers, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have a visa stamped in their passport. It could be weeks, months, years before that takes place.
This is Serene. I just want to make a quick point of clarification. The 1,147 number is people who were found to meet an exception from the provisions of the ban. They are not waiver cases. So those are cases where, so the ban, for example, provides exceptions for people who are dual nationals. So let's say you're a national of Canada and also a national of Iran. The ban should not apply to you. It also provides an exception for people who are already in the United States on a valid visa on the date that the proclamation goes into effect. So there are two categories, I guess, within the ban that speak to how someone from those countries might be able to come here. One category is exceptions, which is not at issue in this lawsuit. And that category covers people that the ban does not intend to include in the first place, like dual nationals, you know, people who are already in the United States. That's the 1,147 number, is people who have been found to not be covered by the ban at all under one of the exceptions that are listed in the proclamation. As to waivers, that's a whole different issue. The most current numbers from the Department of State is that 996 people were cleared for a waiver, but they have not, including after repeated inquiries from reporters and from others, they have never given the number of people who have actually been granted a visa. And what we are coming to understand, you know, through based on the experience of multiple immigration attorneys, we actually have a declaration as an exhibit to the complaint that speaks to some of this, that saying that you're cleared for a waiver doesn't actually mean that you've gotten a visa and doesn't actually guarantee that you will get a visa. So out of the 27,000 something number of people who would otherwise have been eligible for a visa, much less than 996 have been given a waiver and a visa. 996 have been quote-unquote cleared for a waiver, and that's part of what we're trying to understand is what does that mean? By all appearances, it seems like even a large category of those 996 people are still being stalled, and that to our best understanding, someone being cleared for a waiver just means that a consular official has recommended that they be granted a waiver, but that the final decision is happening in D.C. and that they are still going through those 996 cases. That's our best understanding, and truthfully, it highlights how difficult it has been to obtain any kind of clear or transparent information from the government about what is going on here. But I just wanted to make sure to clarify that because those numbers are different, and it has not been the case that people have gotten waivers under the proclamation by anything close to the number of people who are found to meet an exception from the proclamation.
Thank you. And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch tone phone. We can pause another moment to allow any additional questions to enter the queue. And once again, that is star and one to ask a question. And it appears we have no further questions at this time. I can go ahead and turn it back over to you, Scott.
Thank you, Savannah. And I want to thank Serene and Shabnam for joining us on today's call. I also want to give a special thank you to Sudhi for sharing her story with the world and for being a part of this lawsuit. If you have any questions or concerns, you may email me at scott@muslimadvocates.org, and we'll try to hook you up if you have further questions. Have a great day, everyone.